the Agile Revolution. This is Craig.
And I'm Tony.
And we're at Agile Australia 2018 in Melbourne, and we have a couple of guests with us. Now, Jesse, I can never pronounce your last name, so I decided...
Come on, try. I'm just kidding.
Well, the last time I actually tried to say it was Jesse.
That's pretty close, actually. Just one extra vowel you put in there. It's Jesse Sterenshuis.
There you go, right. Do you want to try that?
You see, I didn't even try to do it because I wasn't going to embarrass myself.
Like,
yeah, there you go.
And we got Toby Thompson with us as well.
That's just a difficult surname to pronounce as well.
It really is.
Thompson.
Hard. Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
He just happened to be sitting at the table, so he said, say something on the podcast, and now he's famous.
Here I am.
Yeah, we just co-opted him.
So we're at the Agile Conference, and Jesse, I met you 2 years ago, I think, at the Agile Conference in the US, where you gave an awesome keynote on improv and using improv in, like, improving your Agile, I guess, was really the, mm-hmm. really the whole thing. So improv and Agile, I mean, it is a thing, but maybe people don't make the link. I mean, you know, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this whole improv thing.
Sure. So I started improv when I was 10, so it's kind of like all I know, actually. There's not a whole lot up here other than that, so thank goodness I made that into my job. It's working out well. And doing it my whole life, I just started realizing how the skills just kept becoming really handy for, like, job interviewing, relationships, working with other people. And so I started to think about how could I make that those experiential methods into something where I could help people learn them and use them. And Agile ended up being a great fit, the right audience for the kind of thing that I do. So kind of how it happened.
Excellent. And probably remiss us not to mention your book that you, and I can't remember the name of the other author, but
mm-hmm.
Control Shift,
mm-hmm.
Which sort of takes it into how you use that with teams and, mm-hmm. well, actually yourself, really,
mm-hmm.
But also using that with teams.
Yeah, so it has 50 different games for 50 types of days that you might be having, and there are games that you can do. Yeah, so it could be like your a day that you quit your job, a day that you are walking in somewhere new, a day that you want to tell everybody goodbye, that kind of thing, and then it's got a game that you could play. And so it might be that it's doing it personally, but it could be with a large group, so it kind of has all the options.
Well, that was fantastic. The keynote yesterday was really great. And I think it really hit home with the crowd as well.
Yeah.
In terms of, there's different approaches to this, and we need to start reinventing and moving forward with the Agile approaches and absorbing things like this into the mix. And it makes it stronger. How much feedback are you getting from people that are trying this?
Yeah.
Can I give some feedback? Is that okay?
Now, he didn't want to say anything on the podcast.
Yeah, but now I want to say something.
Yeah.
I want to say something because Jesse was fantastic yesterday, and she's the first person who's actually explained what improv is and how it sort of relates to what we do. Otherwise, I just thought it was, you know, silly clowning around, you know, being theatrical, and I couldn't quite add all the join the dots. But now I understand what it's all about. It's about, you know, unlearning, and I'm all about learning, but, mm-hmm. you know, we really need to start thinking about moving ahead and, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
breaking our old habits. And how do you do that? Well, a great way is by improvisation.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So do you find, I mean, one of the things I've found, because, you know, we run improv type things in courses and things, even if they're like, you know, icebreakers, mm-hmm. and those type of things, and a lot of people are very reluctant to get out of their
mm-hmm.
Out of their zone.
Mm-hmm.
How do you start, you know, I mean, what things can you do to start making people feel, you know, safe and comfortable when you're trying to do these in a workspace?
Yeah, I think because so many of the people that I work with kind of fall under the introverted category, a lot of software engineers and testers and data analytics people. So you have to know your audience. I think that's key, right? So whenever you're facilitating, who's in the room and what's their comfort level, and do you really believe in what you're facilitating? So there's nothing about me, excuse me, that questions what I'm doing. I really believe in it, so that helps. So it doesn't look like I'm up there like making people do something that I'm kind of not sure about or that I really don't care about. And I think that really helps. And then I think about how you can build them up into the comfort level. So don't do anything where you're going to bring somebody up and then everybody's going to stare at them, but do things just in small, quiet groups as partners. Everybody's working simultaneously, so nobody has all the attention on them, and it feels comfortable because of that. And so I think then you can work your way up to doing, you know, something with a little bit larger group, and then you work back with the partners. You constantly kind of orchestrate the room until they don't know what's happened to them, and all of a sudden they're in, you know, for the rest of the time. But I think if you scare them at first, you've lost them, and you just shouldn't even bother, honestly.
And having fun, I guess, is the other part of it.
Yeah, laughing with people. I think if you can make them feel safe and then get them to laugh, then you have them along for the ride. But if you make them feel uncomfortable and vulnerable in the first 5 minutes, there's no way they're going to go with you on the journey and do something that they feel ridiculous about. So that helps.
Do you use them as icebreakers? Because I've always been a bit funny about icebreakers.
Mm-hmm.
I find them unsafe. I mean, but
very gentle. So again, nothing like where I'm like, act like a tree in a swirl, you know, or anything like that. That would be, you know, everybody
you
might
stop
as well
doing that one. Right?
I'm like, darn.
Take it away, Mike.
My swirl impersonation is so good.
I've heard.
Really,
that's really why I wanted to be you.
I do a good dinosaur.
You do. There you go.
That was fantastic, actually. Very believable.
Doesn't work on a podcast.
No, not really.
No.
You should have seen it. You guys are really missing out.
Yeah, it's the only time I've ever managed to crack Craig up when we were training.
Yeah.
He asked me. We used to have a Lego dinosaur.
Uh-huh.
Oh, right.
And then we used to do the first steps to Agile, and he said, what does a dinosaur look like, Tony? And I'm supposed to unveil the dinosaur. And
Triceratops.
Very good impersonation.
Yeah, but like, so with doing icebreakers, so something gentle, for instance, like if I'm sitting around with like C-level executives, right? I'm not going to ask them to like bounce up and down or do anything weird, but like we might start by doing what I call introduction tiebacks. And what it is, it's just simply, I'm going to introduce myself to the rest of the group, and then you're going to introduce yourself, but you're going to find something that I said and tie it back to what I said. So
I like that.
This way everybody's engaged instead of like waiting for their turn to give their introduction and not hearing what anybody else said because they're nervous about their introduction. And then what they don't realize is they're doing improv, they're connecting, they're actively listening, and they're playing off one another by finding connections in like 2 minutes, you know. And so they're like, that's improv. I'm like, yeah. So I think something like that, where it's like you're very gentle, like dip your toe in, and you're not quite sure what you're doing, but it seems fine, and then you're like, it's improv, haha.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
I did an open space with you last year at the Agile, which was awesome. It's just, you know, like 20 people in a circle, and we're just playing a lot of games. But I think I think the thing I actually learned from you, besides from the games, was the simplicity of how you explained the game. And I think that's where we actually go wrong with a lot of these exercises. Mm-hmm. They're either too convoluted, or you have to, you know, it's like this statement I'm making now, where I'm losing lots of words. But it's a few little words, and you say it there. Is that natural just because you've been doing it so long, or does that take practice to find a way to explain a new game simply?
I think a little of both, because I'm constantly making up new games, and this because I want to keep things fresh and fun. But I think because I've been doing experiential learning for so long, it's definitely in my core, you know, so I can immediately find those connections. But the key is definitely the debrief. Like, how can you make sure that these people connect what they did back to their world and make it intuitive and simple?
Yeah.
And it is. It's really simple. I mean, improvising is what we do when we speak to each other every day. It doesn't need to be that complicated, really. And if you want them to use it, you don't want to confuse them at the end of how to run the game or, like, what it means, right? You want it to be simple enough so they can then facilitate it later. So
how do you go about creating a new game or a new improv?
Yeah,
there's got to be a formula there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, I like to talk to the clients about what they're working on and what kind of objectives they want to get out of training or coaching or whatever, and then kind of work backwards from there. So it might even be like a twist on a game. So it could be a game that I've tried, but what are some other objectives or outcomes that come out of it that we haven't explored before? Or it could be like taking one tiny piece out of it, throwing that out the window, and all of a sudden you have a brand new game. So you don't need to necessarily invent something brand new. But just one slight tweak, and then all of a sudden there's like all these new things, which keeps it interesting and fun. And I do a lot of reading and things like that. And I'm like, ooh, that could be a game, or that thing that person just spoke about, I could make that into a game. So I'm playing off of them, and they're giving me game ideas. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you have a go-to game that's your favorite and always wins the improv game?
The winner of all improv games.
This is the one, yes.
Huh.
This is the one I will pull out, because they're all introverts.
They're all introverts, yes. I have a lot of favorites. However, I think my favorite objective, or the most necessary objective in all of the training that I do, is around active listening.
Yes.
So that there's games and active listening that I use if I'm doing design thinking, product discovery, coaching, presentation skills, like all of those things, you know, you need to be a good listener. So there's a game that I like that is pretty simple, and it's called Last Letter Conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And so basically what we're doing is we're just talking back and forth, and the very last letter of what I say will be the first letter of your response. So if I say, how was the conference yesterday?
Yes, it was good.
Don't you think?
I'm not very good. Okay. knowing what I know, yes, I think it was a brilliant conference, and you did a great job.
Beautiful. That's what I was going for.
So, I like that. I like that. That's
yeah, so just keeping people really listening all the way through the very end, instead of thinking, oh, I know what this person's going to say, I'm just going to cut them off and then continue on my way. So it's just helping people slow down, pay attention. And then, of course, it has that constraint of the letter, which makes it fun, challenging, but fun. So that game works really well.
That was fun. I'm going to try that.
We can play it all day long.
Yeah.
It never gets old.
We're doing it.
Yes.
Is there any sort of good source for like inspiration for games, like for, you know, for people like us who are trainers and things a go-to? I mean, obviously we talked about the book, which has got some cool stuff in it, but anywhere you recommend that for inspiration?
Yeah, I think there's a couple good improv books out there, and there's improv sites. Like there's Improv Encyclopedia that has games. However, they're made for actors. So if you're going to look at the game, you have to be thinking about it with, like, would this work if I'm trying to teach this objective? So it might be kind of a stretch to try to figure it out if you haven't played the game before. And then there's a lot of improv books that I like that are more geared towards, like, there's one called Improv for the Spirit. And there's Don't Prepare, Just Show Up is another one that I really like. And these are, I think, are more geared towards just people and how can you incorporate this mindset into your everyday life. And so those would be books that I would recommend as, like, good places to start and kind of just dive in and get nerdy about it and have fun.
So your keynote was all about unlearning, which is, at a conference is kind of an interesting topic. Like, don't learn anything here.
Forget everything you heard.
But as you were alluding to before, Tony, it's an important thing that I don't think we do enough of. If we think about the struggles that organisations have on their agile journey, it's because they can't unlearn their
correct,
past culture, mindset, ways of working.
I think it actually tied in very nicely with Martin Fowler, dare I say it, and he was talking about, you know, one of the biggest things is faux agile. And we walk in now, and the conversations that we have aren't about really, you're going to do agile, or you need, they're about, well, we're doing agile.
Right.
And they're not really, or, you know, they're doing a scrum butt, or,
right,
you know, or
right,
a scrum-ish, or they're doing something.
Something.
Right. And so the way it clicks in for me is really what you're saying there, Craig, is the unlearning of that is not an easy thing, because they're already programmed into a certain way of doing it. And so our biggest challenge then is unprogramming them and reprogramming.
Yes. Yes. And it's hard because it depends on their history too.
Yeah.
Like, how did they learn this thing? How long have they been doing it? Has it actually worked for them okay? Because then they're holding on to all these things. They're like, why would I want to change if this is working well for me? And on top of it, it's actually really hard for me to do that. Our brains as human beings have a hard time letting go. I think that, on top of companies coming in and saying, we're making this shift no matter what. And so that's why I was mentioning the, like, figure out what's in it for them and not just, like, our organization decided to make this grand sweeping change and you need to make it, you need to come along or be gone, you know. And I think find what's in it for them. Why? Why would it matter to them to do those things? And so it's, I call it like the HAFTA versus the WANA. So yeah. The HAFTA is like, I'm telling you what to do. The WANA is, I'm motivated to do this. There's something in it that actually is challenging, but in a good way. And so I'm willing to do the hard work that it takes to actually let go of all the stuff and move forward.
I did consider with some of the leaders I should put them on that bike.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing.
So what I'm alluding to is that as part of the talk is a nice little video. I think we'll try and find a link to that when we put the podcast up. But bike was re-engineered so that when you turn the wheel or you turn the handlebars, the wheel goes the opposite way. Mm-hmm. And people who have ridden bikes for all their life were unable to reprogram themselves to ride it in a very short time.
And it's really funny. So some of the video that I, part of it that I didn't show is he gets on stage and he'll challenge people to come up from the audience and he talks about his bike and all these people are like, oh, I can do it, you know, and he's like, I'll give you $100 and they're like, oh yeah, you know, and they're lining up and they all like practically fall off the stage on a bike, you know, and it's just so interesting to see, like, you think it would be so simple and it's so not. They've been riding a bike the opposite way for so long. I just thought that was such an interesting video.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And with this sort of fixed mindset, is that solvable? Can we unfix it? Can we make a fixed mindset into a growth mindset? Or is that a really tricky thing to do?
I think with most people, yes. I think there are just going to be some people who just have no interest in changing.
Yeah.
Think they know everything.
Well, they've been in the job for 10 years. They've done all the training to be in that job for 10 years. And they've succeeded. They're there.
So I think, I mean, I think most people, if you have empathy for them and you do understand that what you're asking them to do isn't easy, and then if you can figure out why it would be important to them to do it, then most people, if you can give them small things to practice every day, then they will eventually get there. But I think if you have no empathy for them, if you say do it or else,
force feed them,
then no, they're not going to change, right? They're going to actually dig in deeper.
Yes,
they're going to be like clawing their stuff, and there's no way.
And sabotage
things, and then it creates a really terrible culture. So it starts with the listening. It goes back to listening and empathy and saying, like, I want to understand what you care about, why this is hard, where are you coming from, what can you take with you that's still actually useful, and what do we need to let go of together, and I'm going to help you get there, instead of, too bad, you know, do this or find a new job.
and I think when we think about you're trying to take leaders on a journey, when you start with leadership, that's really it. You know, a leader that has good listening skills and empathy for, you know, for their staff, that's kind of the secret sauce, really, isn't it?
So in the past 2 years, I created this, I call it a walk shop. So it's a workshop that we've taken outdoors, and a colleague of mine named Mark Rickmeyer, we had created a different event before, and we decided by all the work that we had been doing that what if we could take leaders from different companies outdoors and hike for 4 days from one place to the next. So last year we did it in Scotland, and each day we hiked, you know, a certain amount of time. We ended up in a new, like, town in the middle of nowhere. And what we did is we worked with the leaders on, you know, first of all, being open to talking about mistakes and how hard it is and vulnerabilities and things like that, and get them out of being bombarded by media, bombarded by email, bombarded by all these things. Give them a small group of people and let the trail dictate how they do the walk shop. So when the trail is very small, you're by yourself and there's mindfulness and you're kind of like taking in the outdoors and just letting go of all the crap. And then the trail might get wider, and then all of a sudden you're talking to three other leaders. And then I'm kind of lightly facilitating the day. So each day kind of has a theme, like unpack, unlearn, like all those things. And we found that that was a really great way to get them out of their element and really connect with themselves, with other people. And instead of seeing those other leaders as competitors, see them as complementers, see them as peers. And that seemed to work really well, too. This year, we're going to do one in Germany, in the Black Forest. We're going to go, and we have 15 people that are going on that. So that's worked really, really nicely.
You didn't lose any of them, of course.
No, I tried. I was like, go that way, keep going. Yeah, yeah.
He's hungry.
Although, me and two of the other women, we did actually, like, miscalculate how much longer we had, so we ended up stopping in this whiskey distillery town and knocking on somebody's door. I'm like, trick or treat. I'm like, can you tell me where we can get a taxi? Because we were like, and they're like, there's no taxis around here. And they're, so we ended up like figuring out how to get to her hotel, which was like, I mean, a story, definitely a story I could use in a presentation sometime. Like, but at the time, I was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Talk about having to improvise. Jeez, we're like stuck in the middle of nowhere. And we're like, are we going to have to sleep in the grass? But we made it. We're good. We're good.
Still here.
Yeah, we're still here. See, it was just all part of the plan. Wink, wink.
Wow. So what are the secrets then to unlearning? I mean, because I think we all, you know, we all, oh yeah, I can, I'm really good and I learn stuff. But, you know, what are the secrets to doing that?
To doing unlearning? I mean, I think the secrets are really finding experiential methods to first get people to feel what it feels like to have to do something different. So that's why I was doing the number game where you had to write those numbers backwards. Because I'm like, if you can't write the number four backwards, imagine how hard it is to do these other things we're asking them to do. And I think so, anything you can think of where it kind of gets people to replace something they know with something else. So like, if we were like to walk around the room and, you know, point at stuff and we had to name it something different, then you're feeling like what it's like, why am I not calling it that? And your brain, it kind of hurts, you know? So start just with like really simple things like that. And then infuse those into, why can't they be a part of a daily stand-up? You know, it takes 2 minutes or less to do something. And just plan to do those every now and then. You're continuing the practice of unlearning. You know, what's the thing you unlearned this week instead of what's the thing you learned? So you can do both.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea for a retrospective, isn't it?
It is a great idea. Mm. And I think a lot of people should try that in their retrospective. So if you're listening, do it, because if I go to one more retrospective that says, what did I do? You know, what's good, what's bad, what am I, you know, come on guys, we've moved on from that.
At least do it with the last letter, change it up a little
bit.
Yeah,
that's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, you can't write a post-it note if you don't start it with the
letter of the one.
I like that, yeah.
There you go.
I'm going to make them all do the number exercise before they do the retro.
There you go.
Yeah. The game I really love that you ran last year was I forgot the name of the game is now, but you were the mayor of a town and you had to...
The mayor of Weirdsville.
Yeah.
Weirdsville. Ooh, yeah. Sounds like an American town.
Yes. Yeah. I think the whole country is Weirdsville at this point. Yeah, so that game is about dealing with pushback. So when you're making a change and it's something you have to change, how can you deal with pushback when you're being put on the spot with leadership and things like that? So, yeah. So we're mayor of Weirdsville. You had to pretend you're the mayor and you had to make some like proclamation or some rule for your town, and then all the townspeople had to try to poke holes in your rule, like, well, we can't do that because this, and the mayor has to like stick to their guns and like
So you make a statement like, you know, I now proclaim that all the roads will be made of shards of glass.
Yeah.
And then your job was to poke holes.
But no, I have no shoes and my feet will be cut up from glass and you have to protect your idea.
Yeah, and I'd go, yeah, well, we'll issue everyone the, you know, new shoes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so we're just basically going like boom, 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 trying to throw him off. And he's practicing like being able to think like this in the face of being pushed back. So it's a fun game. It's hilarious, too, what people, when they're put on the spot, the things that they say.
And things they come up with,
it's hilarious. So.
Brilliant.
Good stuff. Well, we could talk to you for hours, but we know you've got more of a conference to get to. So it's been great having you out here. As you know, I was pushing very hard to get you out here at some point.
I appreciate
So it's great to have you here in Australia. If you want to know more about you, I mean, you know, you've got your whole company that does all these interesting things, like, you know, these workshops and other stuff. If you want to find out more about you, Jesse, where do they go?
So you can go to improveffect.com or on Twitter, I'm at the Improv Effect, and really from there you can find me in all the fun places on social media and whatnot, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who's interested in hearing more.
Excellent. And Toby, where can they find you?
They can find me at softed.com for some beautiful agile training.
Excellent.
He won't say anything though.
No.
I won't say anything.
Yeah.
I won't say anything. Especially not the last letter of what you just said.
Oh yes, you will.
Oh yes.
Oh, I might.
So since we have a couple of improvers here, we have a little thing we end the podcast with. We like to say Viva la Revolution at the end of the podcast. So would you join us in a Viva la Revolution?
Si, si, yes. Si.
So on the count of three. One, two, three.
Viva la Revolution.
Thank you.